Good day, and welcome to the Tyson Foods third quarter 2026 earnings call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To ask a question, you may press star then one on a touch-tone phone. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. Please note this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Jon Kathol, Vice President of Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and welcome to Tyson Foods third quarter fiscal 2026 earnings conference call. On today's call, Tyson Foods President and Chief Executive Officer Donnie King, Chief Financial Officer Curt Calaway, and incoming Chief Executive Officer Jeff Schomburger will provide prepared remarks. Also joining us today and available for Q&A is Wes Morris, our new Chief Operating Officer. Following the prepared remarks, we will have a Q&A session. We have also provided a supplemental presentation which may be referenced on today's call and is available on Tyson's Investor Relations website and via the link in our webcast. During today's call, we will make forward-looking statements regarding our expectations for the future. These forward-looking statements made during this call are provided pursuant to the Safe Harbor provisions of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Forward-looking statements include all comments reflecting our expectations, assumptions, or beliefs about future events or performance that do not relate solely to historical periods. These forward-looking statements are subject to risks, uncertainties, and assumptions which may cause actual results to differ materially from our current projections. Please refer to our forward-looking statement disclaimers on slide two, as well as our SEC filings for additional information concerning risk factors that could cause our actual results to differ materially from our projections. We assume no obligation to update any forward-looking statements. Segment results are presented on a segment operating income level and will be discussed on an adjusted basis. Please note that references to earnings per share, segment operating income, and operating margin in our remarks are on an adjusted basis for our fiscal periods, unless otherwise noted. For reconciliations of these non-GAAP measures to their corresponding GAAP measures, please refer to our earnings press release. Now, I will turn the call over to Donnie.
Thank you, Jon, and good morning to everyone joining us today. Overall, I am pleased with our performance in the third quarter. This is the 12th consecutive quarter of doing what we said we would do. Our strategy is working, and I want to take a moment to reinforce what we have built at Tyson: a differentiated and diversified protein-centric company positioned to capture growing demand for high-quality protein. Animal protein remains a top priority for consumers and continues to gain momentum as a foundational part of a healthy diet. As consumers increasingly prioritize nutrient density and protein quality, including those adopting newer wellness and weight management routines, our portfolio aligns exactly with the foods they are choosing. We are directly tied to and stand to benefit from consumer preference, as protein is economically advantaged versus every other food category. Before I discuss the segment details, I want to emphasize how proud I am of the progress this team has made. Improving our operational performance and execution, strengthening our portfolio, and positioning this company for continued long-term growth. We are the leader in the industry, have a portfolio of iconic brands that consumers are drawn to, and I am confident in where we are headed. Our brands are winning in the retail marketplace. In prepared foods, all 13 weeks of Q3 showed continuous volume and revenue share gains, including our highest volume share ever, with volume share up 70 basis points, unit share up 70 basis points, and dollar share up 50 basis points. This performance was driven by strong consumer demand, disciplined promotional execution, and targeted marketing investments. We hold leading positions across lunch meat, dinner and smoked sausage, and we are managing price gaps and promotion with discipline to compete more effectively. Prepared foods is a branded protein platform that raises the quality and the predictability of our earnings. Innovation and distribution gains remain key engines for this business, with notable brand wins in the quarter such as Hillshire Snacking up 18.4%, Hillshire Farm Lunch Meat up 7%, Adele's Dinner Sausage up 5.8%, Hillshire Farm and Wright Smoked Sausage up 3.4%, and Jimmy Dean Refrigerated Breakfast up 2.7%. Our Tyson-branded chicken categories continued their momentum in retail at 0.9% for value-added chicken category and 3.1% for fresh chicken. Innovation is central to our strategy and is showing up across our entire branded portfolio. Last quarter, we launched our Jimmy Dean High Protein platform, which continues to perform, earning broad retail distribution and resonating with younger consumers looking for convenient, protein-centric options throughout the day. This quarter, I want to highlight Hillshire Brand. This is a brand built for innovation, and our portfolio reflects that. Hillshire Farm brand anchors that everyday occasion, smoked sausage, lunch meat, and ham that consumers have trusted for decades. The Hillshire brand has also extended into snacking, where the line is rapidly growing with consumers seeking convenient, on-the-go options, and with the launch of Hillshire Reserve Lunch Meat, we're now capturing consumers seeking premium offerings, craft-inspired, chef-quality lunch meat for a more elevated eating experience. Together, these brand extensions reach new consumers with a multi-tier offering. These launches share a common thread. They deliver on the priorities driving demand across our business: protein-focused, bold flavors, and everyday convenience, whether through simple ingredient renovation of our core products, new high-protein forms. We are innovating exactly around what consumers are looking for, and we see meaningful runway to expand distribution and bring new products to market. Now let me walk you through our third quarter results, a view of the current and future environment, before Kurt covers the financials and updated outlook. In the third quarter, prepared foods continued to outpace broader category performance in both retail and food service. Q3 marks our third consecutive quarter of volume and sales growth, with sales up 1.7% or $42 million year over year to $2.6 billion. Prepared foods segment operating income was $321 million, with a margin of 12.6%. Operating income was down slightly year over year, as roughly $30 million of higher commodity costs in the quarter outpaced pricing, which continues to catch up. As commodity costs moderate, that benefit will take time to flow through production and inventory. We expect it to be realized later in the fourth quarter and into fiscal 2027. Our results demonstrate continued execution on the controllables and the continued momentum of our strategy and diversified portfolio of leading brands and proteins. We delivered yet another impressive quarter in chicken, with segment operating income of $488 million, an increase of $40 million year over year at a margin of 11.2%. Demand remained robust, and our customer-centric approach continued to drive volume gains. Our retail and food service volume up 3.8%, nearly four times our total volume growth of 1%, reflecting the strength of our strategic customer partnership and consumer demand. We hold the number one brand of chicken, and our differentiated chicken model continues to outperform commodity producers. The outperformance is grounded in structural drivers, including end-to-end execution, live performance, branded and value-added mix, and strategic customer relationships. We continue to strengthen live performance, yields, asset utilization, labor productivity, and supply chain discipline, supporting our seventh consecutive quarter of year-over-year volume and sales growth, and reinforcing the consistency of our chicken business. Importantly, our chicken results are increasingly driven by consumers and customers rather than commodity markets, supported by a favorable mix of value-added and branded products, disciplined revenue management, and strong operational execution. Notably, our net price realization increased versus the prior year, even as input markets softened, further evidence that our results are driven by mix, innovation, and execution rather than commodity pricing. To put that in context, industry chicken cutout values fell, yet our commercial model, anchored in improving mix, volume commitments, and value-added pricing structures, enabled us to grow net price realization. In beef, we continue to navigate the well-documented challenges of the current cattle cycle. Beef segment operating income was a loss of $138 million. Sales reflected that environment. Volume declined 15.9%, while pricing rose 12.1%, as constrained supply pushed input costs and pricing higher. Our footprint optimization actions from the second quarter delivered as expected. However, it was more than offset by USDA margin compression. We remain focused on what we control: customer mix, revenue management, network productivity, cost discipline, within a footprint better aligned to current supply environment. The recent announcement of a phased reopening of the Mexican border for the importation of cattle shows potential improvements to long-term cattle availability. We appreciate and support the USDA efforts to protect and to reopen the border. Although the reopening won't have a material impact on the remainder of this fiscal year, which ends in September, it does provide the potential for some level of improvement in 2027 and beyond. To be clear, the reopening of the Mexican border will not solve the entire gap of beef losses we are currently seeing. We are not waiting passively for the cattle cycle to turn, and we continue to focus on improving the variables within our control. Simply stated, our mission in beef is to be the best operators in the areas in which we compete. Our pork segment continued to operate in a stable environment. Operating income was $60 million with a margin of 3.8%. Consumer demand was solid and hog supplies were adequate. Together, these factors have kept the pork value chain well balanced, supporting more consistent and predictable operating margins. We also continue to benefit from greater integration with prepared foods, allowing us to optimize product mix and direct raw materials toward their highest value uses. We remain focused on improving mix and further integration across the value chain. Finally, our international segment continued its steady performance. International segment operating income was $48 million with a margin of 8%, supported by continued cost discipline and improved execution across key markets. We remain on track with our annual outlook for this segment. Let me briefly address the macro environment. While consumer sentiment continues to be pressured and inflation remains elevated, demand for protein remains resilient. Consumers are making value-conscious choices, and protein-centric foods, including our Tyson, Jimmy Dean, Hillshire Farm, Ballpark, Wright, State Fair, and Adele's, are winning that consideration. The breadth of our brand and product offering allows us to fulfill the needs of the consumer wherever they are on their journey. Food service volume remained constructive throughout the quarter, growing 1.8% versus last year, and our retail performance continues to outpace the broader food and beverage category. This reinforces the enduring nature of our protein-centric portfolio across economic cycles. Our scale, operational capabilities, and brand strength allow us to serve customers and consumers effectively, even in a challenging macro environment. And we believe these advantages will compound as conditions improve. We will continue to be disciplined and intentional about where we invest, whether in brand support, innovation, automation, supply chain capabilities, our network optimization. Our focus is on projects that strengthen service, improve productivity, and drive cash flow and long-term shareholder value. Looking ahead to fiscal 2027, I am confident in the year ahead. In many respects, we expect it to look a lot like 2026, building on the momentum of our end-to-end execution that has defined this year. With that, I will now turn the call over to Jeff Schomburger, our incoming CEO, for a few introductory remarks.
Thank you, Donnie, and a huge thank you for your years of leadership and the strong foundation the team has built. This puts us in a position to build on our strong momentum going forward. I want to take just a minute to introduce myself to our investment community. I'm looking forward to meeting you all soon. While my title is new, Tyson Foods is not new to me. I've had the privilege of serving on the Tyson Foods Board of Directors for more than 10 years, and over that time, I have developed a deep respect for this company, its people, culture, brands, customers, and long-term potential. I've watched this management team navigate complex cycles, make disciplined decisions, and build a more consistent organization. I spent time over the past few weeks meeting with our team members, visiting facilities, engaging with our customers and consumers in their homes, and I'm excited about their energy and passion. As one team, one Tyson, we will remain focused on operational execution, strengthening the iconic brands in our multi-protein portfolio, investing behind differentiated capabilities, and generating long-term shareholder value. Innovation, quality, affordability, and understanding what consumers want will be critical so our brands continue to earn a place at tables around the world every day. To our shareholders and analysts on the call today, I look forward to getting to know you better, sharing more about our priorities, and continuing to earn your trust through consistent results and transparency. With that, I'll turn it over to Kurt to walk through the financial details.
Thanks, Jeff, and welcome. It's great to have you on the call. Total company sales were $13.9 billion, essentially flat compared to the prior year, as a 3.4% increase in average sales price offset a 2.8% decline in volume, the latter driven largely by tighter cattle supply and beef. Third quarter segment operating income was $779 million, an increase of $18 million versus the prior year, driven by stronger results in chicken, pork, and international, partially offset by lower beef results. Corporate expenses and amortization were lower by $24 million compared to the same period last year, driven by disciplined cost management. Total company adjusted operating income was $547 million, a margin of 3.9%. Adjusted earnings per share for the quarter were 99 cents, up 9% compared to last year. Turning to our financial position, our approach to capital allocation remains disciplined, deliberate, and forward-looking, supported by a strong balance sheet. Our priorities remain balanced, investing in the highest return areas of our business, maintaining balance sheet strength and our investment-grade credit profile, and returning cash to shareholders over time. Free cash flow remains central to our strategy, and we are encouraged by the cash generation trends through the first 9 months of the year. Operating cash flow for the first 9 months of the year was $1.47 billion, and capital expenditures were $556 million, resulting in free cash flow of $913 million. We ended the quarter with $4 billion in liquidity and net leverage of 2.1 times. In the quarter, we repurchased $31 million of our shares, and year to date, we have returned $652 million to shareholders, including dividends. Since quarter end, we have repurchased an additional $49 million of our shares. Our balance sheet remains very healthy as we continue to prioritize financial strength, our investment grade credit rating, and cash management to drive long-term shareholder value. Let's take a moment to review our updated outlook for fiscal 2026. As a reminder, our accounting cycle results in a 53-week year in 2026 compared to a 52-week year in 2025. Our guidance is presented on a comparable 52-week basis. We narrowed full-year sales growth guidance to 2.5 to 3.5% year-over-year. Total company adjusted operating income range is now forecasted to be $2.1 to $2.3 billion, driven by the challenges in our beef segment relating to cattle availability. We still anticipate interest expense of approximately $365 million and a tax rate of around 25%. Capital expenditures are now expected to be between $700 and $900 million, and we have narrowed the range of our free cash flow to $1.3 to $1.7 billion. Turning to our segment outlook. In prepared foods, we are raising the midpoint of our full-year segment operating income outlook with a revised range of $1.3 to $1.35 billion. We expect continued growth in top line and bottom line in the fourth quarter and for the full year. In chicken, we are reaffirming our full-year segment operating income outlook at a range of $1.9 billion-$2.05 billion. This is broadly comparable with 2025 and supported by our commercial model, operational execution, and the impact of our live operations, along with continued volume growth. In beef, industry conditions are challenged, and we now expect a full-year segment operating income loss in the range of $650 million-$500 million, as continued USDA margin compression and higher cattle costs more than offset the benefits of our network optimization actions. In pork, we are reaffirming our segment operating income outlook of $250 million-$300 million. In international, we are also reaffirming our outlook of $150 million-$200 million. Our corporate expenses and amortization outlook remain the same at $950 million-$975 million. Overall, I remain confident that 2026 will be another strong year for the company. I will now turn the call back to Donnie for closing remarks.
Thank you, Curt. I'm excited for the opportunities in front of us in 2027 and confident in the long-term prospects for Tyson Foods. Let me quickly recap our forecast and focus areas. In chicken, we anticipate continued strength in our differentiated chicken model, underpinned by our end-to-end execution, live performance, branded and value-added mix, and strategic customer relationships. In prepared foods, we expect continued growth in both volume and profit, supported by the strength of our brands, ongoing innovation, and sustained consumer demand for convenient, protein-centric options. In beef, we will remain focused on operational discipline and performing competitively within our optimized long-term footprint as we continue to navigate the challenging cattle cycle. In pork and international, we expect stable results with continued gains in operational execution across both segments. Before we open the call for questions, I want to take a moment to say thank you to our team members, our customers, our family farmers and ranchers, and our shareholders. I'd also like to thank our chairman, John Tyson, and the Tyson family, Barbara, John Randal, and Olivia, for their support and leadership throughout my time as CEO. Tyson is a strong company because of the people behind it, and I'm grateful for the work they do every day. We operated with discipline throughout another dynamic quarter, and I feel good about the progress we are making. Our strategy is working, our portfolio is strong, and this team is well-positioned for the opportunities ahead. Most importantly, we have a solid foundation in place. We are building momentum, growing the business, and staying focused on delivering stronger performance over time. I am incredibly proud of what this team has built and energized by what lies ahead under Jeff and his leadership team. With a clear focus on accelerating our brands and value-added mix, deepening our connection with consumers, strengthening strategic customer relationships, and continuing to raise the bar on operational execution, Tyson is well-positioned to build on the momentum and create meaningful long-term value for our shareholders. While I'm stepping out of the CEO role, I will remain on the board and stay closely engaged in the company's performance and long-term direction. This strategy matters deeply to me, and I will continue to support Jeff and the team as we deliver on the commitments we have made to our shareholders. With that, I will turn the call back to John to begin the Q&A session.
Thank you, Donnie. We will now open the line for questions. Please note that our cautions regarding forward-looking statements and non-GAAP measures apply to both our prepared remarks and the following Q&A. Donnie, Curt, Jeff, and Wes are available for your questions. Operator, please provide the Q&A instructions.
We will now begin the question-and-answer session. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. If at any time your question has been addressed and you would like to withdraw your question, please press star then two. At this time, we will pause momentarily to assemble our roster. Our first question comes from Andrew Strelzik with BMO. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you. And first, I wanted to say congratulations, Donnie, as you take this next step. My question, you've highlighted strong performance in chicken and prepared foods. I guess as we look forward, what gives you confidence in the sustainability of that performance in 2027 against a tough commodity chicken and consumer backdrop? And do you expect to hold or grow profits in those segments next year?
Great question, Andrew, and thank you. And thanks for this particular question. It's a good one. So let me start out with this and see if I can do this. Curt, if I leave something out, you or someone else feel sure, step in. So let me start with what we've done. I mean, we're really pleased with our Q3 performance. We've improved volume, gained market share, and increased profitability. That's our 12th consecutive quarter of doing what we said we'd do. Prepared Foods raised its guidance at midpoint to $1.3 billion-$1.35 billion on a third straight quarter of volume and share growth. Chicken delivered its seventh straight quarter of volume and net sales growth with $488 million of segment operating income and 11.2% margin, a $40 million improvement year-over-year. This is an execution story, end-to-end execution. So Andrew, back to your question directly to FY27. I need to make this really clear. I don't think about Tyson as a commodity chicken company. About three-quarters of our chicken segment's operating income now runs on the same model as Prepared Foods, a pull business built against committed strategic customer demand, our investment in the number one brand in chicken, and direct digital engagement with our consumers. This is not a push business exposed to the open cutout market. Industry-wide chicken oversupply is a commodity market dynamic. It pressures processors selling into that spot market. This is not us because most of our chicken volume is already spoken for before we place the baby chick. Chicken is running the same playbook that has made Prepared Foods so resilient: growing through mix, brand investment, customer partnership, and consumer-centric discipline, not by chasing commodity price. And our portfolio, excluding beef, grew segment operating income $172 million, or 6.5%, over the first nine months, led by chicken, prepared foods, and pork. And by the way, pork's role in the portfolio is largely a raw material supply to prepared foods. Beef. Beef hasn't performed the way we expected, and we're not pretending otherwise. But we're controlling what we can control there, and we're not waiting passively for the cycle to turn. Beef is our only true commodity business. All of this taken together, Andrew, it's hard to find another consumer staples food company growing both volume and profitability the way we are. A customer-built business, not a commodity one. And that's why I'm confident this will continue in FY27 and beyond.
Okay. That's super helpful. And maybe just a follow-up. If I heard you correctly, I think you made a comment in the prepared remarks about 2027 looking a lot like fiscal 2026. And I just wanted to clarify if you were talking about earnings or operating profit, or was that a broader comment about kind of the strategic priorities, the operational discipline, those types of things? Thank you.
Yeah. Great follow-up. As I think about 2027, we did say it would look a lot like 2026. We think the momentum continues across all of our businesses. I think that would be underscored with growth in the business. That would be growth in volume, growth in profitability,
We'll continue to execute, you know, with our strategic customers. And so I think it's across all businesses, even beef, where, you know, I just said that we're not, you know, we're not pleased with the performance of that. Our execution in beef is still very good. And the execution across all businesses is still very good. And our model, as I just tried to point out, you know, we're not a commodity company, except, for example, beef. And so that's what gives me confidence in that, and I feel good about that. And so in terms of, you know, from a pricing standpoint, even if you use Q3 as a proof point, it's not a price. This wasn't a price story for us. If you look at underlying cutout values, composite cutout, you know, the cutout for commodity chicken on the commodity market was down 45%. And, you know, we saw net price realization, and that's driven by, you know, our mix, a more value-added mix, which that we've talked about often. You know, our pricing models, even for those products and areas that where, you know, they would, you know, they're not quite branded, and they're not quite value-added, but we have these customer pricing models that smooth and trim peaks and protect balance. And so we feel good about that. You know, in our strategic customer partnerships, we continue to add to that, and all of these are built on service, quality, and innovation, not discounting. You know, a proof point, for example, is the 11.2% margin in chicken in our Q3. And we're not chasing share price, chasing share through price. We're growing via mix and execution. And so all of that together gives me great confidence in our ability to not only do what we did in 2026, but even beyond and even better.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Ben Theurer with Barclays. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, and thank you very much for taking my question. Also, Donnie, I can just follow Andrew's comments here. Congrats on a great tenure here with Tyson.
Thank you.
So let me pick up a little bit on the chicken business and just the commentary you just had. What I would like to understand a little bit better, as we look at your chicken year to date, and then obviously, if we just take the fourth fiscal quarter of last year, we're kind of like shaking out at the low end of the guidance for fiscal 2026. So what I would like to understand, based on what you've done and what you've implemented over the last couple of quarters, what would take you to the higher end of the guidance versus what would be basically a year-over-year fourth quarter flat? So just a little bit more detail maybe on the fourth quarter, particularly in chicken, just to understand the high versus low for the full year guidance. That would be my first question. Thank you.
Sure. You know, I would tell you in terms of fourth quarter last year, it was an all-time record. And you know, quite frankly, the market was exceptional. And so, you know, we took advantage of that by producing some product and actually selling that on the market. So, we took advantage of that. This year in Q4, it's not going to look that way, so we obviously won't do the same thing again. But our bread and butter is going to be our branded and value-added portfolio and those strategic customers. So, we think Q4 will be a really good quarter. It'll be a really good year for us as a company, but you're not gonna see the peaks in Q4 that we saw in Q4 of last year because of what I've just described, the actions we took last year to take advantage of the market.
Ben, this is Curt. I might just add, obviously, as you looked at the guidance, we obviously maintained chicken's range that we had last quarter. You know, that would imply somewhere between a $430 million-$580 million midpoint, just a little bit over $500 million. I just point out, right, our average through the 9 months is running, you know, right at about $490, just inside of the $500 mark. So it's a pretty balanced year in total, I think. the high-low would be either a 52-48 split, front half, back half, or at the high end, 48-52. And so, as Donnie mentioned, a really strong quarter in Q4 of a year ago for the reasons he illustrated. I think we were more like a 47-53 front half, back half split last year. So I think it's pretty balanced in total across the range we provided.
Okay. Got it. Thank you very much. And then as you look into the prepared foods business, I want to maybe understand a little bit as you're balancing that out over the remainder of the year, but then also building on the momentum into next year. Clearly, it's been different than a lot of other food companies, and you've been able to establish a better margin profile. So maybe help us understand what allowed you to reach that level and how confident are you as it looks into next year to maintain that margin level in prepared foods in particular? Are you seeing any cost pressure, anything we should be aware of that might be a risk as we move into fiscal 2027?
Sure. Thanks for that. Let's start with really two things that are fundamental to every business. We're in the protein, the value-added protein business, where we sell real food. And so that's a big point of difference for us. But in terms of how that looks, looking at the most recent quarter, and we see this continuing, a lot of similarities to all the things I just said about chicken and the overall portfolio. But we had three consecutive quarters of volume and net sales growth, certainly outpacing the industry. This quarter, again, we gained share in volume, dollars, and units. In our Q3, 13 of the 13 weeks, we saw continuous share gain in retail. We achieved the highest ever volume share this quarter. Of course, you look at all of our competitors, and you'll see real quickly that they didn't do that, and you pointed that out. But our brand wins were all broad-based. Hillshire Snacking was up 18.4%. Lunch meat was up 7%. Del's was up 5.8%. Smoked sausage up 3.7%. And Jimmy Dean breakfast was up 2.7%. Prepared foods is the jewel of our portfolio and delivering as promised. And we're trying to illustrate for everyone that our chicken business is very similar in nature to that. But it's all this is driven by those strategic customer partnerships that we have, innovation, where we continue to gain distribution and increasing household penetration. And so the alignment with the customer and the consumer and with us, it's our success that we're seeing is a result of creating a win-win across all of those three constituents.
But just add to that as well, similar to the commentary I had for chicken. I know you had a question there. And as we finish the fourth quarter, our range in a tightened prepared foods range implies a Q4 somewhere around roughly a $290-$340. That's with an average in the first 9 months of just inside of $340. So I'd say it's pretty balanced again in Q4, as you know, and we've talked before. Typically, our second half in prepared foods is a little underweight for the first half, the historical kind of 55-45 split. But as we've really reshaped the portfolio and driven all the elements, as Donnie highlighted, in delivering for the customers and consumers, we expect that to be a bit more balanced. And this would be a year that's implying a continuation of that more balanced view. Somewhere around 52-48 would be about the midpoint. So we will lap a Q4 of a year ago that was a little under for the reasons we talked about last year, but very positive outlook in Q4 and also carrying through into 2027, as Donnie said earlier, expecting growth both in volume and profitability in prepared foods for next year.
Perfect. Thank you very much. I'll pass it on.
Our next question comes from Michael Lavery with Piper Sandler. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. And Donnie, congrats. And Jeff, welcome. Just wanted to come back to chicken. And I know genetics got some a little bit unexpected airtime last quarter. Just curious if you could give us an update there, partly with an eye. I know you've already touched on some of the key kind of moving parts for how to think about next year. But I think it sounds like some of the benefit from genetics and even that business's own momentum could pick up. There's a little bit, I know you made it clear it's modest, but some potential help from Mexico cattle imports. And I know you called out how some of the easing costs in prepared foods would hit next quarter and start flowing through. So I guess maybe am I right to think we should consider those things as well? How big a role could the genetics piece play? And if you put it all together, I know you said similar to fiscal 2026, but it sounds like maybe even a step up and better. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah. Okay. So a lot of questions in there, Michael. Let me start with the genetics question, and I may ask you to be maybe a little more specific on the following ones. But let me clear up a few things as it relates to our genetics business. First, I would remind you that the genetics business is part of our chicken segment. It's an important part of our chicken story, but our entire end-to-end chicken business is performing well. So let me see if I can explain this. So you start with the chicken segment. Within the chicken segment, you have domestic chicken, and you also have our genetics company there. Both have P&Ls. Within that genetics company, we have two breeds predominantly. We have one that is small bird genetics, and we have one for big bird. Now, I'll get a little more color on the big bird piece of that, which is really the story we're talking about here. We sell those genetics domestically, internally to our domestic chicken business, but we also sell to outside customers and competitors. That's predominantly today a small portion of what we do. If I look at Cobb, or excuse me, our genetics business, our Cobb P&L, if you go back to 2014, our genetics, our big bird genetics, began to decline. They never were as competitive as we needed, and they troughed at about 2024. And so what that looked like is that not only did the genetics company suffer from a P&L perspective, but also domestic chicken suffered from that as a result because we were disadvantaged in areas like eggs per hen house, livability, and of course, the amount of breast meat you get per live animal. And so what we talked about last time was we now have a competitive big bird genetics that is rolling through our supply chain. The status of that is this: by the end of the fiscal year, end of the calendar year, I should say, we will be harvesting about, in those locations that use big bird genetics, about 75% will be this new line of genetics that we have. The balance of that 75% will occur in fiscal 2027, or 25%. Again, that's only for those chickens that require big bird genetics. And so you should see a P&L impact from the genetics company, and likewise, and even more importantly, a bigger impact on the domestic chicken business. That's where the real fruit is born. So let me pause there and let you redirect me.
No, that's really helpful. And I had a jumbo-sized question. The other piece was just kind of rolling it all into the overview on just the look ahead, because it seems like that genetics flowing through should be a tailwind next year. And same with some of the prepared foods cost pressure easing. and even maybe a lift from cattle imports. So that plus some of the commentary you'd already added on how to think about the moving parts next year, it sounds like there's room for some nice improvement. And maybe I was just trying to make sure I understood how to potentially nitpick your wording when you say similar to fiscal 2026. It sounds like there's lots of reasons to believe fiscal 2027 could certainly be better or possibly nicely better. Is that fair?
Hey, Michael, it's Kurt. Let me pick up on a couple of things there. I think, look, and appreciate where we are in the cycle. We're not giving guidance yet for 2027. Certainly, we need to finish 2026 before we get there. So give me a little bit of liberty there, if you wouldn't mind. But I think what the message we were intending to deliver qualitatively is, first and foremost, we expect to continue on the trend that we've been on in prepared foods to grow volume and ultimately profitability. We've demonstrated that, differentiated than most anyone else, and we expect to continue to deliver that. I think Donnie's messages in the first question were really around the differentiation that we believe we have in our chicken business and not being a commodity company, not being a chicken commodity company. And so we expect another constructive year in chicken. Not ready to give guidance yet for the reasons I illustrated earlier, but we expect it to be another constructive year. I think we've done well in these last couple of years, and we believe a lot of those things are within our control, and we'll continue to manage those. And in total, right, certainly there is a lot of market pressures in the beef business, but what you can expect from us is to run our beef business as efficiently as we can and control the controllables, which is the message that we've been sending over the last year plus, certainly as it's been a challenging beef business. So a little early. We'll certainly give more commentary as we get there in our next call, but wanted to leave you with some qualitative thoughts in 2027 by each of the segments. Hopefully, that helps with some context there.
Really helpful color. Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Our next question comes from Heather Jones with Heather Jones Research. Please go ahead.
Good morning. And Donnie, I just want to say it's been wonderful to work with you all these years, and you're definitely going to be truly missed. And Jeff, wanted to extend a welcome and looking forward to working with you.
Thank you, Heather. Thanks, Heather.
Yeah. I guess I wanted to start out with a balance sheet capital allocation question. Your balance sheet is the strongest it's been in a while. And so just wondering if you could give us updated thinking about how you're thinking about capital allocation. You mentioned some share repurchases you did recently. So just updated thinking on that, and is there potentially any large-scale M&A that could be on the table given how strong the balance sheet is now?
Yeah. Thanks, Heather. And thanks for noting, certainly. We've worked very hard through the business all the way through the capital allocation and the choices that we've been making over the last couple of years. So appreciate the notice. And as always, I start out a capital allocation question around our priorities and reemphasizing maintaining that financial strength is always first in the list. But we also invest in the business, both organically and inorganically, to your question, and as well as returning cash to shareholders. I'll comment on the share repurchases in just a second. But I think we've demonstrated consistently that we intend to build that financial strength. And as you noted, we have an incredibly healthy balance sheet. We're right at about $4 billion of liquidity, about 2.1 times on a net leverage basis. We've taken gross debt down about $800 million this year, over $900 million of free cash flow. And with that, we've invested about $550 million in CapEx, and we've shared a range a little tighter, but we shared a range this morning, $700 million-$900 million of CapEx. And so far, on a year-to-date basis, returned about $650 million to shareholders through dividends and repos. But to your comment, we did make an earlier comment in the prepared remarks around. We've already done some share repos already in the early part of Q4 of about $45 million or so. I think that represents, you know, certainly an attractive valuation for us to allocate capital to. And it's, you know, it's been a good return for us, we believe. But we still continue to see great opportunities to invest in their business. And we'll take a balanced view as we have. And we'll certainly share guidance in the upcoming call next quarter relative to our thoughts of CapEx. But we continue to see really great opportunities to invest organically in our business.
Okay. Thank you for that. And then my follow-up is I just am trying to reconcile a couple of things on the chicken business. So, Donnie, to your comments about the genetics, improved yield, improved hen production, egg production, just basically improvement across the board on the productivity. During y'all's Q3, the industry grew volumes like 4.7%, but y'all's volumes were only up 1%. I'm just trying to reconcile disparity there. Is that just lower external purchases? Or just how should I think about that so that I can think about it correctly going forward?
Sure. You know, your numbers in terms of supply, if I understood correctly, you know, they do go up from an industry standpoint. I would remind you that, very simply said, we match our supply to our demand. That being said, remember that we are growing our branded and value-added offerings at a faster pace than we're growing, you know, the overall. In fact, it's almost four times what we're growing overall sales. So, you know, if you go back and look through history, you would find that, you know, we probably sold more whole birds or we sold more of a product with bones in it, meaning could be whole body, could be eight-piece, could be any of those things. But we're selling a more value-added mix today that looks more like a portion boneless, skinless chicken breast or a ready-to-eat chicken tenderloin or things like that. But our business is growing, but it's growing in the places where we want it to grow. And as I referenced, that's growing about four times the total sales of about just over 1%.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Leah Jordan with Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my question. And Donnie, I wanted to say thank you for everything you've done for the company and shareholders over the years, wishing you the best. And Jeff, definitely looking forward to working with you and congrats on the new role.
Thanks, Leah. Thank you.
This has all been really helpful color today, and I know we'll have more discussions about 2027 going forward, but I just wanted to dig into prepared foods. You know, you're taking share, but the category has broadly decelerated recently, and we're in a mixed consumer backdrop. So maybe you could just comment on the competitive environment overall, what you're seeing in terms of promotional activity. And then in an earlier question, you talked about you still expect volume growth into next year. So I was just curious, you know, how you're thinking about category growth versus share gains as key drivers to that volume growth in prepared foods. Thank you.
Great question. But let me say this. In all of these categories in which we participate, I think it's important to remember we're the category leader. Being the category leader requires you to grow the category. And that's a responsibility that we take very seriously. And I get the overall categories are trending down and we're growing. Most of that is driven by new product innovation, improved distribution, and the momentum in there, you know, just continues. You know, we're connecting with younger consumers. We talked about that in here, that our consumer was aging and that we had an opportunity with younger consumers. Some of our new Jimmy Dean high protein, for example, is resonating with younger consumers. But we've also targeted products, you know, like Hillshire Snacking, you know, for on-the-go growth. And And so think of it in terms of the point of difference. It's protein focused, bold flavors, and everyday convenience. And we see a lot of meaningful runway ahead to expand distribution and launch new products. So we feel good about where we are, but even in 27 and beyond, we see, you know, we see tremendous opportunity behind the iconic brands that we have, not only in prepared foods, but in chicken, look to continue to grow there. We have what I would say is the best in class tools across the whole commercial front that, you know, we're, you know, we've invested in digital tools, and we're seeing the benefit of that with consumers and that first party data and those type things. That's a point of difference for us, I believe. We have we've done work with and tested a number of products using agentic AI. And, you know, that's looking good, and we'll expand that as we move forward. So we're getting closer to the consumer. We have the products that they want. They taste good, they're affordable, they're nutritious, and they're convenient. And so the intersection of all that and all this taken together leads to growth, efficiency, you know, a lot of runway ahead. And it all starts with the consumer.
Okay, that's great color. Thank you. And then for my follow-up, I did want to stick with prepared foods a little bit more here in your comments around, you know, we should get some cost recovery later in the fourth quarter. Just more detail on how we should think about the timing of that in the quarter and into next year. And then what are you seeing and how are you planning across the different inputs? What are you seeing in terms of inflation or deflation? Any helpful color there? Thank you.
Sure. You know, if I look at in Q3, we had about $30 million of higher commodity costs in Q3. That was concentrated predominantly in beef trim. Pork commodities have begun to decline. You know, our pricing continues to catch up on beef. The pork benefit that I just mentioned from declining commodities didn't really show up in Q3. It was in inventory. The pork benefits will flow through in Q4, and we're seeing that, and into 27. You know, the if I think about fuel cost, you know, that's starting in what was it about mid-April? We saw fuel costs go up. You know, fuel and distribution costs were a bit of a headwind in Q3, and have been you know, since April, but. Remember that that fuel for us, or particularly customer freight, is a pass-through. It may lag, a quarter or two, but we ultimately recapture that. We do not subsidize that. And so, you know, we think all this is baked into our plan. And as you might expect from us, it will be conservative in our approach. We're extremely proud of our prepared foods business. I personally don't believe there's another packaged goods company that is performing at the level of our prepared foods today, and there's significant runway ahead.
Very helpful. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Peter Galbo with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for your questions. Kurt, maybe just one on beef. I going back to your comments about, I think you said potential for improvement next year, it would be slow on the back of, you know, Mexico reopening. But just, I think if I look at street estimates for next year and understanding you're not giving quantitative guidance today, they're looking for you to, though, like have the losses almost that you're going to see this year. I just wanted to push on whether that's even like within the realm of possibility given the update today. Or whether there's probably a more conservative approach directionally that we should all be looking at.
Yeah, Peter, this is Wes. Thanks for your question. The administration opening the border to Mexico, historically about 5% of the U.S. harvest comes out of Mexico. And so, as you know, that starts August 24th in Arizona, and then goes to New Mexico, and then ultimately to Texas. And so that creates some tailwinds for us going forward. And most of those are feeder cattle, so it'll take 6 months plus after they go on grass or into feedlots. And then heifer retention up 3% is a positive move forward. It's not the rapid rebuild we saw in 14, but another set of tailwinds going forward.
Okay, thanks, Wes, for that. And I guess just to pick up on the comment, Donnie, on pork inputs, you know, moving lower. Obviously, that's a favorable tailwind from a margin standpoint. I think there's been some discussion, just, you know, how much of that is supply driven. Just, hey, we have more availability, and so that's creating a better environment. Versus, has there been, you know, demand destruction? Not necessarily for Tyson, but just at an industry level in some of these subcategories, and that's kind of pushing down the input costs. Just wondering if you could kind of elaborate a bit more from that perspective, what you're seeing kind of on a category level for the industry. Thanks very much.
Sure. Thank you for the question. You know, we have seen them go down, and of course, you know, from a pork perspective, you know, it looks to me to be stable from a supply chain perspective. And so, you know, there was, you saw lots of concern or questions about PRRS. You know, that was top of mind, like in Q2 and about the supply. And, you know, for us, we've not seen the real impact of that. I mean, the hogs that we have are predominantly in the Midwest, and you know, so we weren't impacted at all by that. I think hog supplies will be adequate moving forward. Demand is solid. You know, I think if there's any negative to this, you know, I don't think we've seen the pork business pick up as much volume as you might expect with high-priced beef. I think chicken took most of that, and so that was a bit surprising. A bit surprising, but I think we're well balanced from a Tyson perspective in terms of the hogs. And remember, our hog supplies are predominantly an input for our prepared foods business, and so you know, we expect stable, predictable raw material cost as we move forward, and certainly an advantage as we optimize that through prepared foods.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Thomas Palmer with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thanks for the question. Donnie, congratulations, and Jeff and Wes, welcome to your respective roles. Jeff, I know it's still early, but I did want to maybe ask on kind of your key focus items and initiatives coming in the context, especially of you come from maybe a more traditional CPG background rather than one that's more protein centric, and to what extent that might signal a bit of an ongoing change in kind of Tyson's focus in having you kind of head up with so much focus on value add that Donnie's been commenting on it here for the last couple of years. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Thomas. And, you know, I think Donnie's been pretty clear about what our strategy is, and more importantly, very clear that it's working. So as you expect, as I come in, we're going to stay the course and accelerate the strategy that is already delivering great results. So I'll have a lot more to say about that in the future, next quarter. But let me just say a couple things, Thomas. And the first is, I can't tell you how excited I am to be on this team. I've spent an enormous amount of time the last few weeks listening and learning, meeting with team members, several customers, 5 plants. And I've visited the homes of consumers to see how they experience our categories and brands. And, you know, as you can tell from this call, we have a great foundation in place for our next chapter of growth. We will win. Our people, our culture, and our brands are strong. And the customers I talk to, they want us to help them grow. So, like I said, I have a lot more to say in the future, but I really like where we are, and I really like our chances. Thanks, Thomas.
Thanks for that. I had a another question on chicken. Look, for several quarters, feed costs have been a cost tailwind. I think they were pretty neutral this quarter. In your view, what's kind of the path forward when we think about the input cost environment for the chicken business, and then to what extent we should think about the business having maybe price escalators to mitigate the impacts? Thanks.
Sure. I mean, I look at the futures on that, and we do see some moderate increase in that as we move forward. I think what I might say to that, Tom, is that I think it's important to remind everyone that we have alignment with strategic customers where we collectively manage the risk associated with input cost. And we have a diversified pricing models that try to mitigate these things as well. So we're not uncovered in this. We're not trying to outguess the market, but we're trying to be on the market and try to get just stable commodity prices. And I feel good about what we're able to do there, not only what we've done, but as I think about moving into 2027, I think the process is in place to mitigate those risks. Those risks or increases will be real if they occur, but based on all the projections I've seen, based on corn and soy, I feel good about where we are.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Alexia Howard with Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone, and congratulations to Donnie and welcome to Jeff. Can I just start with beef? Can you talk about how much more cost-cutting productivity savings and benefits there are? I know you've been working really hard to close plants, to improve capacity utilization, and get the business right-sized given the state of the herd. Is there more of that to come, and what would it take to get beef profitability back to positive? Is that within reach at this point?
Yeah, thanks, Alexia. I've been in my role for 7 weeks, and certainly beef has been a top priority. We do have a great cross-functional team effort going on as we speak to control everything we can in this period of tight cattle supply. Our past optimization delivered on plan, but unfortunately was offset in the quarter by live to cut out spread differences.
Thank you. Yes, I mean, I'm just curious about whether there's a path to profitability here. But okay, and then separately, freight cost inflation has come up as a problem for other companies. My understanding is that you've got a lot of owned freight, so it shouldn't be an issue for you. Can you just elaborate on that? What is your exposure there if freight costs continue to rise?
Sure. Yes, we have seen the inflation from fuel cost in the quarter and essentially since about mid-April. But I would remind you that customer freight is a pass-through. We don't subsidize it. Recovery can lag 1 or 2 quarters. But to your point, our large internal fleet that we have helps us mitigate our overall cost impacts. And so that is performing as well. But it is higher, but we mitigate that through our process.
Great. Thank you very much. I'll pass it on.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Pooran Sharma with Stephens. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thanks for the question. And congrats on a successful tenure, Donnie, and looking forward to working with you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Maybe just two quick. Sure, thanks. Just two quick ones for me. Or maybe just we could loop this into one, really. It's on comment on heifer retention, Wes. You got to it before I did. I did want to ask about this because I was a little surprised seeing that number as high as it was. We were hearing concerns of drought in key cattle-producing states. So chatter was heifer retention or herd expansion would get delayed. So A, was that 2.7% or 3%-4% upside, was that a surprise in your view? And maybe as just a follow-up, what you mentioned 5% of head slaughtered for the border reopening, and we're doing it phased. How long do you think it would take for us to get a full 5%?
I think it's going to take up to a year by the time you move through the process in Arizona, then New Mexico, then Texas. Knowing these are younger cattle that'll go to grass or feed yards, it'll be close to a year before you see the positive impact of that border opening. As for your question on heifer retention, no, there's been enough positive environmental conditions that I wasn't surprised by the 3% heifer retention. But I would point out that's not a number, that's the rapid rebuild we saw in the 2014 timeframe. So encouraging, it's starting, but still a long way to go.
Great. Thank you.
This concludes our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Donnie King for any closing remarks.
Thank you for your time and continued interest in Tyson Foods. We look forward to sharing our continued progress with you next quarter.
The conference is now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.